Living on Earth needs your support to be heard each week. Kindly give what you can today by using the donate link to the left of this page. Thanks.
It's Living on Earth. I'm Bruce Gellerman.
And I'm Steve Curwood. The walrus is one of the world's most mysterious mammals. Its habitat is far from humans and very inhospitable for researchers. Much of what scientists do know about them comes from the native peoples who hunt them. One very little-known fact is that walruses are musical. Their songs are some of the longest and most complex in the animal kingdom. Now climate change is adding urgency to walrus research. In Vallejo, California, researchers are hoping they can discover the secrets of walrus breeding songs and use that knowledge to help preserve the species. Matthew Brunwasser reports, and a warning, his report frankly refers to walrus reproduction using scientific language.
Now is a trying time to work at the walrus tank at the Six Flags theme park. Trainer Tony Rail introduces me to Sivukok, a 2,400-pound male Pacific walrus who lives here. He's about the size of a Honda Civic. Rail says he is being obnoxious, like a guy in a bar.
Well, Sivukok thinks it's breeding season, so right now he's in his rut. Male walruses go through a rut behavior where they'll make a lot of different vocals to solicit females and try to get the girls' attention. However, the females have already been through their cycle and are no longer in season, so they're done with him. So now he's soliciting everyone else he can find.
The park is trying to breed Sivukok with its two female walruses, but no luck so far. Rail says they haven't quite figured out how to get him in the mood at the same time as the females. He also seems a bit confused.
Strange things at different times seem to get him excited. He seems to like anything at the lower windows. We have had a new recycle bin that we put at the window. He really liked that for a while. Anything different, strollers, people, anything power tool related.
Sivukok and the two females came to the park when they were only a few months old after being orphaned in a hunt in Alaska. All are unrelated, and none grew up with adult walruses. So the behavior is an ad hoc mix of instinct and learning in captivity. Holly Morocco is a reproductive physiologist researching walruses at the park. She says little is known about walrus breeding in general.
There's only been 10 walrus calves ever born in zoological facilities. So that's pretty significant. That they're very sexual animals. They live long lives in zoos. But for some reason, we're not getting a lot of babies. So clearly, something is missing.
Morocco says weather, temperature, and sunlight could be factors, since the Bay Area is mild year-round. She's also checking hormones and monitoring body fluids regularly in both Sivukok and the females to find the triggers for their breeding behavior. She says she wants to collect the first walrus sperm sample ever taken. A healthy batch would be valuable for study and could also be used to artificially inseminate one of the females. She holds up a special tube-shaped instrument.
This is the artificial vagina, and it's basically a PVC pipe. It has got a thick rubber on either end of it so that there's no sharp edges. We will train him to put his penis inside there, and hopefully we'll figure out what exactly the trigger is that's going to make him feel comfortable enough to give us a sample.
The park will then build a mount for the artificial vagina and hope that Sivukok takes a liking to it. There are still many surprises when you're dealing with walrus sexuality. The walrus, like many mammals, has a baculum or penile bone. Researchers say it's an impressive sight.
It's about 3 feet long. The native people use the walrus penis bone as walking sticks. They use them as clubs in the past. And, I mean, it's a pretty remarkable, definitely a pretty remarkable structure.
Another extraordinary attribute of male walrus behavior is their musicality. Through a viewing window, research biologist Colleen Reichmuth is observing and filming Sivukok's displays and vocalizations underwater.
This is Sivukok, track number 3. He's at 2.5 meters. He's head up. He's filling the sacs.
Reichmuth is gauging the strength of Sivukok's sounds.
Moans at 2.5. Double knock.
He claps his flippers in the water as part of his display. You can hear it loudly, even through the 4-inch-thick window of the tank. Here it's also amplified through a speaker.
You know, walruses are some of the most amazing animals in terms of their acoustics because they can make sounds with all different parts of their body.
Walruses are pinniped beatboxes, clapping, moaning, whistling, and making bell sounds with an air sac in their necks.
And an important sound that we should hear today is called the knock. It's a really loud knocking noise that he is making inside of his forehead without releasing any air. And we're not really sure, you know, how he's manipulating his anatomical structures to make such a loud noise.
To try to find out, Reichmuth rejoins Sivukok face-to-face upstairs. Leah Coombs is a master walrus trainer who has known Sivukok since he was a baby.
Good.
Reichmuth puts her hand into his mouth to try to feel where the sounds are coming from. The display is followed by a surprise blown from his nose. Sivukok is clearly still learning to sing. In the wild, the knocks of male walruses are far more developed. This might sound like a German industrial band from the 1980s, but this is a wild walrus, recorded in the Canadian High Arctic, underwater. The sounds are so loud and sharp they can be heard above the sea ice and underwater more than 5 miles away. This medley of breeding sounds includes knocks and bells. Scientists can only hope they figure out these mustachioed enigmas quickly enough to keep up with the pace of Arctic climate change. Joel Garlick Miller is a walrus biologist at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in Anchorage. He says a warming Arctic is bad news for walruses because they prefer to live on floating sea ice.
If you look at long-term data sets of sea ice thickness and extent, we've seen some very substantial declines in both the area covered by sea ice and also that sea ice thickness over the past 20 years.
When the sea ice disappeared in the summer of 2007, thousands of walruses hauled up on the Alaska coast for the first time. The skittish animals have no experience with people, cars, or airplanes, and are prone to stampeding and trampling, which can kill juveniles. Wild walruses are almost never seen by humans, unlike polar bears, which live close enough to people to eat from their garbage cans. Garlick Miller says no one has ever been able to count how many walruses there are.
They inhabit a vast, remote, inaccessible habitat, probably the most remote area on the planet and most difficult to access. Shifting sea ice over thousands and thousands of square miles, many hundreds of miles offshore is where they prefer to distribute themselves.
So U.S. and Russian scientists began the first serious population survey of the Pacific walrus in 2006. The findings should be ready soon.
It's been quite a challenge to get some very basic biology about them.
Walruses are not currently listed as threatened or endangered, but due to diminishing sea ice, U.S. Fish and Wildlife was petitioned last year to consider listing them. A decision is expected in the fall of 2010. For Living on Earth, I'm Matthew Brunwasser in Vallejo, California.